Please turn to 3 John. We spent some time studying the letter identified as 1 John. Then last Wednesday evening, we studied 2 John. And for a little while this evening, we want to concentrate on the things revealed to us in the letter called 3 John. This is another very brief letter, but it does contain some valuable information. And we would do well to study this letter carefully and apply the instructions that are given to us. Let's read it. It's only 14 verses long. The elder unto the well-beloved Gaius, whom I love in the truth. Beloved, I wish above all things that thou mayest prosper and be in health, even as thy soul prospereth. For I rejoiced greatly when the brethren came and testified of the truth that is in thee, even as thou walkest in the truth. I have no greater joy than to hear that my children walk in truth. Beloved, thou doest faithfully whatsoever thou doest to the brethren and to strangers, which have borne witness of thy charity before the church, whom if thou bring forward on their journey after a godly sort, thou shalt do well, because that for his name's sake they went forth, taking nothing of the Gentiles. We therefore ought to receive such, that we might be fellow helpers to the truth. I wrote unto the church, but Diotrephes, who loveth to have the preeminence among them, receiveth us not. Wherefore, if I come, I will remember his deeds which he doeth, prating against us with malicious words, and not content therewith, neither doth he himself receive the brethren, and forbiddeth them that would, and casteth them out of the church. Beloved, follow not that which is evil, but that which is good. He that doeth good is of God, but he that doeth evil hath not seen God. Demetrius hath good report of all men, and of the truth itself, yea, and we also bear record, and ye know that our record is true. I had many things to write, but I will not with ink and pen write unto thee, but I trust I shall shortly see thee, and we shall speak face to face. Peace be to thee. Our friends salute thee. Greet the friends by name. The writer of this letter is not revealed by name, but he did refer to himself as the elder, which means one of advanced age. That's a particular designation that John used to refer to himself several times. When he wrote these letters, he was a man who was up in years. So he just simply referred to himself as the elder. We have a number of sources that are not inspired that identify John as the writer of this letter. So we do have quite a bit of evidence indicating to us that John was the inspired writer. Now, that being the case, whenever I study the writings of John, I always try to keep in my mind the fact that he was a devout follower of the Lord. He came from somewhat of an humble background. He and his brother were fishermen. And when Jesus called them, they were by the Sea of Galilee, and they were with their father Zebedee. When Jesus called them to follow him, they not only left their nets, but they left their father, and they followed the Lord. And you can read about several events that involved John as well as his brother James. It's unfortunate, but James lost his life. Life was taken from him by Herod. As far as we know, he was the first apostle to die a martyr's death. John went through that. He had spent about 3 years with the Lord, and you can see the progression that he made as a devoted follower of Christ. But then he wrote much of the New Testament. He wrote the Gospel of John, 1 John, 2 John, 3 John, and then the Revelation. So he was quite a writer. But the Lord used him to even influence us today. But I try to keep in mind that John was handpicked by the Lord to serve as an apostle. John spent time with the Lord. He lived with the Lord. He ate with the Lord. He listened to the Lord. He knew the Lord personally. So as we're studying the writings of John, we're studying from someone who actually knew Christ himself. I believe that's a beautiful picture, and I always try to keep that in mind when I'm studying the writings of the Apostle John. But notice that this letter was addressed to a man named Gaius. We learn that from verse 1. John and Gaius, according to what's written, had a very close, special relationship. John said that he loved Gaius in the truth. And I think it's interesting that John referred to Gaius as beloved no less than 4 times. Now that's an indication that there was a close, special relationship between John and Gaius. John highly commended Gaius. He commended him for his spirituality in verse 2. John commended Gaius for walking in the truth. Furthermore, John commended Gaius for showing hospitality to others. So this man was an active member of the early church, and John was very much aware of it. They were very close. But John said some very special things about his friend Gaius. Now, as you examine this letter carefully, you will see that John called upon Gaius to follow good examples, and he showed that he must not follow evil examples. Now, it's unfortunate, but John had to write about a man named Diotrephes. Diotrephes stands out as an evil example. We know what he did because John spelled it out very clearly. And it would be important for Gaius to avoid the example set by Diotrephes. It would also be important for him not to become discouraged. You know, sometimes evil people can discourage good people. Well, that could have been the case. John called upon his friend Gaius, that he loved dearly, to avoid the example of Diotrephes and follow good examples. You see, good examples are encouraging. So while Gaius may have been discouraged by what Diotrephes was doing, John mentioned another man named Demetrius. And according to verse 12, he stands out as a wonderful example. John talked about the good things that he did. Well, while evil examples can be very discouraging, we need to accept that, and we need to look at good examples because they are very encouraging. Well, when John brought this letter to its conclusion, he indicated that he wanted to visit Gaius personally in the near future. There were other things that he wanted to discuss with this man, but he said, we'll do that when we can speak face to face. Well, that's some general information concerning the book we call 3 John. Let me give you an outline that is in one of my reference books. I think it's a good brief outline for 3 John. I have found it useful over the years when studying a book to have a good outline. This is a brief outline, but it's a brief book. Let's go through it very quickly. Basically, it's what we've already covered in the general information. In verse 1, John gave his signature as the elder, and he also gave his salutation. He indicated that he was writing to Gaius. In verses 2, 3, and 4, he mentioned how grateful he was for the prosperity and health of Gaius. And he expressed his gratitude for his great faith. He also mentioned the faith of other disciples. In verses 5 through 8, John gave Gaius some instructions for the service that he offered to missionaries, those who brought the word in person. John began verse 9 by showing that he had written a previous letter to this congregation. He referred to it. But then he went on to talk about Diotrephes and his behavior as a tyrant. That's what we would call him. And John mentioned his plans for dealing with him when he came. I've always thought, I hope Diotrephes repented. Now, John was an elderly man at this time, but he was very much capable as an apostle to deal with Diotrephes and put him in his place once and for all. I've shared this with you before, but I'll mention it again. Sometimes when I'm studying the scriptures, I try to imagine things, and I try to imagine an assembly where Diotrephes was in it, in the congregation, Gaius was in it, Demetrius was in it, John was very familiar with the people in this congregation, and maybe Diotrephes is gone on one of his tirades, and all of a sudden, through the back door walks in the Apostle John. I wonder what Diotrephes would have thought. If he had any followers, which I think it's safe to assume he probably did, I wonder how quickly they would have dropped him and followed John. I don't think John would have had to say very much. His very presence would have caused Diotrephes to think about his situation. I don't know if that happened or not, but I try to imagine things when I'm studying the scriptures. John said, if I come, I will deal with him. I hope Diotrephes repented. We know that John is oftentimes called the apostle of love because he wrote so much about love. But during the Lord's ministry, he surnamed James and John the sons of thunder. I think John would have been able to deal with Diotrephes. But John said, if I come, I'll deal with him. In verse 11, he gave another admonition to Gaius to continue his godly life. In verse 12, he gave quite an endorsement of Demetrius. He would be the good example to follow. And then in verses 13 and 14, he gave his conclusion, saying that he had other things to discuss, and he planned to come for a personal visit, and at that time, they would talk face to face. That's a good outline to follow when you're studying this very brief letter. It only takes just a couple of minutes to read it. But this little letter is packed with information. We can tie in other passages of Scripture, and there is a wealth of information to learn from this very brief letter. Well, let's talk about a few points of information to learn from what John wrote. And a very practical point from verse 2 is, our spiritual welfare is more important than our physical and material welfare. I've always been amazed at what John said about Gaius. Look at verse 2 again. Beloved, and that one word indicates that there was a close relationship between these two. I wish above all things, in other words, this was a matter of great importance to John, that thou mayest prosper and be in health. Now he's talking about his material welfare as well as his physical welfare. I wish above all things that thou mayest prosper and be in health, even as thy soul prospereth. That's quite an endorsement of Gaius. He was so devoted to growing spiritually that John said, I wish that your physical and your material welfare would be as good as your spiritual welfare. Gaius had things in the proper order, didn't he? He was more concerned about his spiritual welfare than he was his physical and his material welfare. Well, we need to understand that the Bible does warn us over and over again against placing too much emphasis on prosperity. Now, the Lord blesses us abundantly, and we need to appreciate that. But the Bible warns us over and over again about keeping things in the proper order. Now, that's what Gaius did. He had things in the proper order. That's what the Bible teaches us to do. Let's tie in a few other verses to go along with this. Let's go to Matthew 16 and read verse 26. Matthew 16 and verse 26. For what is a man profited if he shall gain the whole world and lose his own soul? Or what shall a man give in exchange for his soul? Now those are two thought-provoking questions that Jesus asked. And he's teaching us to have things in the proper order. Gaius was one who stands out as having things in the proper order. He was devoted to growing spiritually. And John said, I wish above all things that your prosperity and your physical health would be compared to your spiritual welfare. Let's look at Luke 12 and verse 15. We looked at this passage not too long ago. But Jesus was teaching. Someone in verse 13 made a request that Jesus speak to his brother about dividing the inheritance with him. Now, first off, I believe that was rude because Jesus was dealing with some very important spiritual matters, and it seems that this man just interrupted him. Now, apparently, one brother had taken advantage of another brother. I'm assuming that the father of these brothers had passed away, and of course the older child would have received an extra portion of the inheritance. But it seems that one brother took advantage of the other. And of course the one who was taken advantage of wanted Jesus to straighten that situation out. Jesus first responded by saying, Man, who made me a judge or a divider over you? In other words, I didn't come to get involved in domestic issues like that. Over the years, it hasn't happened in quite a while, but in my younger preaching days, I got called upon to try to settle quite a few different disputes. And you never cease to be amazed at some things that can come up in the families of people. And of course, people think that the young preacher can settle everything. Well, the young preacher may not have too much wisdom yet, and maybe he is struggling to deal with issues himself. But Jesus first said, who set me up to get involved in settling issues like that? But remember, there were other people present that the Lord had been teaching. He would always take difficult situations and turn them into teaching opportunities. And he said unto them, in other words, the other people who were there, take heed and beware of covetousness, for a man's life consisteth not in the abundance of the things which he possesseth. Then he went on to tell the parable of the rich fool. Well, we need to be very mindful of what Jesus said when he warned against covetousness. Covetousness is an uncontrolled desire for more, more, more. And that's what the rich fool did. The Lord had already blessed him abundantly, but he was blessed so abundantly, he said, what am I going to do with all this extra goods that I have? I'm going to tear down my barns and build greater barns. Then I will do this and I will do that and so on and so forth. And his soul was required of him. If you notice what the rich fool said, he never mentioned God. He never mentioned his fellow man. It was all me and I. Well, he lost his soul. Now keep in mind what Jesus said. What shall a man give in exchange for his soul? After this man lost his soul, do you think he would like to go back and change things around? Well, it was too late. The Bible warns us against covetousness. Now, those words came from the Lord himself. And let's look at 1 Timothy chapter 4 and verse 8. First Timothy chapter 4 and verse 8 says, for bodily exercise profiteth little. In other words, there is some benefit to physical exercise. But godliness, that spiritual exercise, is profitable unto all things, having promise of the life that now is and of that which is to come. Bodily exercise is only going to profit us as long as we're living on this earth. Spiritual exercise will benefit in the hereafter. So over and over again, the Bible warns us against placing too much emphasis on material things. It's not wrong to be wealthy, but sometimes I'm reminded of the rich young ruler. I have to admire him because he came, according to the Gospel of Mark, running to Jesus, and he wanted to know what he needed to do to have eternal life. And the Lord said, keep the commandments. He said, which? Jesus listed several commandments from the law of Moses. Remember, that was in effect at the time. And the young man said, well, I've done all those things from the time I was a youth. What lack I yet? Jesus told him what he needed to hear, to go and sell what he had and give it to the poor and come and follow him. Well, Bible says he left filled with sorrow. What was his problem? His possessions controlled him. He didn't control his possessions. His possessions controlled him. That young man had a lot to offer. He was young. I have to admire him for that. He was wealthy, and he was a ruler. That is, he had some position of authority. Think about his influence he could have used. From what he had been doing all of his life, he apparently was quite a good man. But he wasn't willing to pay the price to follow Christ. So we need to keep in mind that our spiritual welfare is more important than our physical welfare and our material welfare. Gaius knew all about that, and John commended him for it. Another point of information that we need to consider is that hospitality is to be shown to those who labor in the truth. That's dealt with in verses 5 through 8 of 3 John. Now, we covered last week in our study of 2 John that those who show hospitality to false teachers are partakers in their evil deeds. That's in verses 10 and 11 of 2 John. But those who show hospitality to faithful teachers are described as fellow helpers to the truth. Notice the contrast. In 2 John, John dealt with those who showed hospitality to false teachers. He said they're partakers of their evil deeds. But then in 3 John, he mentioned those who show hospitality to faithful teachers. Well, they're fellow helpers to the truth. Whenever I read verses like that, I think about an experience that Teresa and I had many years ago when I was in school. We knew an elderly couple. They were very dear, sweet people. And one Sunday after the service, I preached for a small church when I was in school, so that when I graduated, not only did I have my degree, but I had 2 years of experience. But I learned a lot from those dear people. I don't know how much I taught them, but I learned a lot from them. But this one older couple, they were very hospitable, and they were way up in years. But one Sunday, I remember Sister Daisy came up to me, and this is the way she said it. She said, "You wouldn't want to go home and eat lunch with us today, would you?" I said, "We'd love to, Miss Daisy." She said, "Now, we're just poor country people. We don't have very much." I said, "Whatever we have will be fine." Well, they lived a good distance away from the building, so it took us a while to get there. That woman had a feast prepared for a king. And we ate and enjoyed it and had a very dear time. This couple was known for their hospitality. And if you had a friend with Brother Jesse, you had a dear friend. Well, I remember those people from a long time ago. They had a great influence on me. Well, that's just an illustration of how hospitality to those who teach is a great blessing. Well, let's talk about Diotrephes and his conduct. What he did was sinful, and his actions are to be avoided. Now, we have to be sure that we understand exactly what he did, but before we can appreciate that, we need to understand what his real problem was. And John spelled it out. John indicated that Diotrephes loved to have the preeminence. In other words, he loved to be first. Well, the Bible teaches that that is a grievous error. Let's go to 1 Corinthians 13 for just a moment. Now, you probably are thinking, "Raymond, don't you know that's the love chapter of the Bible?" Yeah, I know that. But let's notice a characteristic of true love in verse 5. Now, Paul is listing out 15 different characteristics of love. 8 are negative, 7 are positive. In other words, there are certain ways in which true Christian love does not behave, and then there are certain ways in which it does behave. But in verse 5, he's talking about charity or love. "Doth not behave itself unseemly, seeketh not her own." That just simply means that true Christian love does not insist on having its own way. Well, that was the problem with Diotrephes. He loved to have the preeminence. True Christian love was lacking in his life. Let's also look at Colossians 1 in verse 18. Now, this verse is speaking about the Lord, but it does mention preeminence. Colossians 1 in verse 18 says, "And he," speaking of Christ, "is the head of the body of the church, who is the beginning, the firstborn from the dead, that in all things he might have the preeminence." Well, if Jesus has all the preeminence in the church, and he does, that means that there's no more to go around among anyone else. He has all the preeminence. And if a brother or a sister, I might add, has a desire for preeminence, they're wanting something that Christ has all of. Well, in this particular case, in 3 John, a brother had the problem, but I've seen also where a sister might have a problem of preeminence. I preached for 4 years in South Texas, and they call that problem the Queen Bee Syndrome. I'd never heard that expression anywhere else, but that was the expression used down there. Well, I've run into the problem in other locations, but that was the particular name that was used for it there. The love for preeminence is the love for something that Christ has all of. That means there's no more left to go around to anyone else. Well, let's notice what Diotrephes did because he loved to have the preeminence. Now remember, we mentioned earlier in our outline that John had previously written to this church. He said so. Diotrephes rejected that message that John had written to the church. Now, we need to understand how serious that was. John, an inspired apostle, wrote a letter to the church. And this man, with the love for preeminence, rejected that message. Now remember, back in that day and time, letters were more than likely delivered by hand, by a personal messenger. Well, not only did Diotrephes reject the message that John had written to the church, he used some malicious words to bring accusations against John and his co-workers. Now, that wasn't a nice thing to do, was it? Furthermore, he would not receive the brethren who delivered that message from John. I'm assuming from this that there were several Christian men who hand-delivered this letter, or attempted to. Diotrephes rejected the message that John had written. He used some malicious words to bring some false accusations against John and his co-workers. He would not receive those brethren who attempted to deliver that message from John. And if anyone did show hospitality to those brethren, Diotrephes threw them out of the church. Now, we know what his problem was. His problem was he loved to have the preeminence, but we know what that led him to do. That was an assault against a message from an inspired apostle. I believe the Lord takes that seriously. John took it seriously because he spelled out what this man was guilty of. Now, he's writing to Gaius, but he mentioned what Diotrephes did. Apparently, John had learned about this from someone. So he's dealing with the mistakes of Diotrephes. And he's calling upon his friend Gaius not to be discouraged by what Diotrephes was doing, and by all means, do not follow his example. But as I kind of alluded to earlier, I've learned over the years by experience, when you've got a man behaving like this, he will always have some followers. That goes without exception. He will always have some followers. If he didn't, he wouldn't have any type of authority or power at all. Well, Diotrephes was guilty of some grievous errors. John pointed them out, and he called upon his friend Gaius to avoid what he was doing. But then he talked about Demetrius. The conduct of Demetrius was very good, and John pointed that out. Apparently he'd heard about this man. Apparently he'd heard about Diotrephes, but he also heard about Demetrius. And he showed that the conduct of Demetrius is to be imitated. He had a good report of all men and of the truth itself. I think that's an indication that John had heard about the conduct of Demetrius and he highly commended him. Now, on one occasion that we read about in Matthew chapter 20, Jesus talked about the way to achieve true greatness in his kingdom. Let's look at Matthew 20 for just a moment. Matthew 20, we will start at verse 25. I'll spend just a moment talking about the situation that led up to this. James and John, isn't that interesting? The two brothers. They're learning some important information about this time. Jesus is training them. But James and John approached the Lord with their mother, by the way, with a request. One of them wanted to sit on the Lord's right hand in his kingdom, and the other wanted to sit on the Lord's left hand. It would appear, if you consider all the gospel accounts together, that this request came from the mother. But the Lord's response was to the brothers. I've often wondered, do you suppose they got her involved thinking that maybe Jesus would be more likely to respond to her request? Well, what the Lord said, he said to James and John. Well, after the Lord spoke to them in verse 24, the other 10 were moved with indignation against the two brothers. So here we have the Lord's 12 apostles together. Two have made a request and they didn't understand what they were requesting. They didn't understand the nature of the Lord's kingdom. Jesus answered them, and now the other 10 are angry at them. That sounds like a pretty desperate situation. Jesus turned it into a teaching opportunity. Verse 25. But Jesus called them unto him and said, you know that the princes of the Gentiles exercise dominion over them, and they that are great exercise authority upon them. Now he's talking about the Roman government, the way it was set up. There were local leaders. We would call them state leaders. And then there were national leaders. In other words, there's a hierarchy in the Roman government. And the Lord said, in government, that's fine. He said in verse 26, but it shall not be so among you. In other words, there's not going to be a power structure among you. But whosoever will be great among you, let him be your minister. And whosoever will be chief among you, let him be your servant. Even as the Son of Man came not to be ministered unto, but to minister and to give his life a ransom for many. Now, did Diotrephes listen to those words? No. But Demetrius did. And John highly commended him. Well, Jesus pointed out the way to achieve true greatness is by following the example of Demetrius and avoiding the example of Diotrephes. And I think it's interesting that at the end of this letter, John made a few statements that indicate that Christians should know one another. Notice what he said again. Our friends salute thee. Greet the friends by name. Christians should know one another. Now, we can't limit our friendships to members of the Lord's church, because we have the opportunities to influence others who are outside of the body. But the Lord's people need to follow his instructions and love one another.